Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
And today we're going to be talking a little bit about the situation, the Carolina crisis, as it's affecting the world, actually. Everybody cares about this issue, and it's fundamental to all societies, about the struggle for equality. We're going to have a report on the Canadian boat to Gaza, Freedom Flotilla, various other labels. Bob Lovelace is in the Mediterranean. We're going to be reporting on what we know of his travels. And we, at the halfway point, we're going to have a guest who has recently visited Donetsk in the Ukraine. That should be a helpful thing to learn. I mean, I love to talk to people who actually been to places and seen them. There is an important sort of off the top of the show thing to mention, and that is that the Minister of Intelligence of the Rwandan government, Mr. Paul Kagame, president and proprietor of Rwanda, his chief of intelligence has been arrested. I believe he's in custody in London on a warrant from Spain. Quite a complicated story we got here. He is being held on charges that he was responsible for the deaths of some Spanish priests who were in Rwanda in 1994 during the war and the massacres that occurred there. They were among the first to die, actually, I believe, some of them. And this Spanish court, quite well known, will be known to the listeners of CIUT in the Taylor Report because we have interviewed the individual in Spain who has brought these charges. And the story is on just coming out now, and so I urge you to go into the internet. I'm sure it's now available as soon as you say Rwanda. I'm sure that's going to pop up. The story, though, comes from Judy Rever. I hope I pronounced it right, a journalist who has won a lot of respect. You find her in recent months in the Globe and Mail talking about the criminal side of the present regime in Rwanda. So it's going to be a story that we do follow.
If I can just comment on that arrest, is that one article I read linked this individual who's been arrested, linked his name with the murder of Father Guy Pinard, who was a Canadian priest, who was also killed in Rwanda around 1994.
Yeah, there was. It's a very important part of the story of what happened because several churchmen and actually some nuns also were killed. And through the period of the war, beginning with the invasion of Rwanda in 1990 October, there were priests and nuns were among the casualties, and it is part of sorting out the truth of what occurred there. So it is something very important to follow. By the way, we don't know why he was in London. They describe him as visiting there or traveling with a friend. He has a very important title and job. I would just put the asterisk that it's possible that he was there for political reasons known to him. And I don't mean by that I think he necessarily was serving his government. There have been a number of top people who've had their problems with the president, including a former intelligence leader who was found murdered in South Africa, who also found it uncomfortable to work under the direction of a general. Anyway, it is a very important story, and we will be following it. And I want to thank Ann Garrison, by the way, who in Berkeley, a great journalist who's been following all these things, for reminding me of its importance today as the story was emerging. Now, on the matter of what occurred and how it's being treated, a white terrorist killed nine members of a black church in South Carolina. As we all know, as people have been told, it's a historic black church. It's been attacked before. And there is a discussion of how to discuss it. But I would say, first of all, we want to point out that he is this young man's – what he has had to say shows him, in my view, to be a product of the American education system. And of the tolerance of Confederate lies about the history of the United States. It's a part of the ugly compromise struck by the white power structure of America. And the if they want to correct this, I think they ought to stop saying, well, we've had 250 years of slavery and we've and slowly evolving. You're not evolving if you don't focus on the facts. And there has been a tendency and that needs to be identified to rationalize the behavior of people in this, as by saying, well, the it was a brave war fought by two principled sides and that kind of thing, and that we can recognize people who served the Confederacy. That actually is a slap in the face to America. It's a slap in the face to its Constitution and to the Bill of Rights, and particularly to those who fought for the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, which is what was won in the Civil War. These are American victims of a standing white supremacist idea, which, to credit people, you want to remember that one of the people who held that idea was Thomas Jefferson. There was another man called Jefferson Davis, but Thomas Jefferson was not only a slave owner, he was committed to the slave system. He provided a rationale which was racist. And so the crisis, in my opinion, is that when the Civil War, the struggle for the Union and to end slavery, which led to the decision that the former slaves were citizens. After all, they'd been in America longer than anybody, frankly, except the Aboriginal people. It recognized they were citizens, and it recognized that they had the right to vote. That's something guaranteed to all Americans, but it was denied them. And that is a betrayal not of only of black Americans. It's a betrayal of all Americans. My documentation is the following. Famous talk given in a place called Gettysburg. President made an important point. He said that the nation had been founded, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now, that's what he said in 1863, President of the United States in the midst of a great war. And he said, now we are engaged in a war testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. And the Americans still have the problem. Can you be dedicated to the equality of all people before the law and having equal rights and whatnot? Can you do that and survive? I remind people, we spoke about this on our program last week, John A. Macdonald, the Prime Minister of Canada, said they could not. He said that's mob rule if you have equality. And therefore, he didn't believe in it. Now, in 1864, they had an election, and I find this really interesting. I hope it'll help. The Democrats had a platform. The Democratic Party, that would be the party of Bill Clinton and Franklin Roosevelt and Harry Truman, that party ran a man named McClellan against Lincoln. And they had a poster, election poster, and I've got a copy, photocopy of it. And here's the choice. They said the choice is clear. On one side it says elect Lincoln, the other side it says elect McClellan. And it says, if you elect Lincoln, note the words, and the black Republican ticket, if you elect Lincoln and the black Republican ticket, you will bring on Negro equality. That's what you're going to get if you vote for Lincoln. It's rather clear. That was the presidential election of 1864. And by the way, it's called playing the race card. They were saying, well, okay, we're having a civil war about maintaining the Union, but if you follow Lincoln, you're going to end up with Negro equality. That's the Democratic Party warning you that that's what's going to happen. Now, people said, well, you know, Lincoln will probably lose. Actually, there was not a lot of optimism. You know, everybody knows pretty much the story. They've seen Spielberg's movie. That in the summer of 1864, it was assumed that Lincoln would be defeated. But he was not defeated. He was not defeated. He won overwhelmingly against this line, which said, if you vote for the black Republicans, by the way, they weren't called the black, but this was a label put on them. You know how Bill Clinton wanted to be called the black president? Well, you know, by certain people, he wanted, oh, please call me that. Well, Lincoln's enemies called him that. That was, they said, be very clear. And by the way, they always caricatured him as an ape, which gave you the idea of what they were thinking. So he won that election. Then they won the war. And then we come to this. There were 300,000 black men in uniform who fought, who were given guns. Now, at the beginning of the war, there was not a one that had a gun who was allowed in the army. During the war, it was the African-Americans who put their lives on the line, and they did not enjoy the same rights as a white soldier. They were treated badly, but they fought on because they understood the stakes. And when I say treated badly, Jefferson Davis said that if they're captured, they will be either sold or killed. And if they find any white officer, white commanding officer of black troops, they'll kill him too. That was Jefferson Davis, honorable man. The South has statues of him all over the place. So that was his position. So America was saved by African Americans. They fought in the war. And then people say, well, the South. The South had 4.5 million African Americans. And so when you say, well, you know, Jefferson Davis speaks for the South. No, he doesn't. He speaks for a minority who illegally waged a war, a traitorous war, against Washington because they didn't like the fact that the people had voted for a president who said he opposed slavery. And by the way, that's all he said. I oppose slavery. He didn't say he was going to end it even. He just said, I'm opposed to it. And that was good enough to cause a situation where, and South Carolina was crazy state number one, and I'm going to insult them for a moment. I do want to remind them that a governor of South Carolina did not agree that they should leave the Union. He said, this is a mistake. Starting a war over this issue is a mistake. I'm against it. But they went ahead and said, they called themselves the Fire Eaters. We're going to fight to maintain slavery. He said, well, I'll tell you something. State of Carolina, South Carolina, is too small to be a nation and is too big to be an insane asylum. And he's lucky they didn't lynch him. Now, when the war ended with African Americans paying with their lives and being guaranteed their freedom, something called Reconstruction was set up. This was to protect the enforcement of the rights of all Americans, not African Americans alone. All Americans would have the right to put forward candidates, to run for office, etc. There were some limits on those who'd been traitors. That happens. They said, no, you're not going to be allowed to run, etc. And they had a period where African Americans' rights were protected. It lasted about 10 years. Then the white power structure of the North and of the South made a quiet, illegal agreement denying American citizens the right to vote and the right to access, the same access as enjoyed by any other American. That was taken away from them. It was a crime and was committed against the American people. And they did it in the name of what they called the South. But the South is, that only works as an expression if you are putting a minus mark in front of black people. The black Americans were quite patriotic. They did not desert their country. They fought for it. And yet, the streets and marketplaces and capitals still have these statues of people who killed Americans, as the great documentary filmmaker who produced the Civil War series, Mr. Burns. He said he decided to make the Civil War series documentary because he was looking at a statue of Robert E. Lee, and he said, that man killed more Americans than Hitler. Kind of important observation. And that set his mind to work. Now, we keep here. There's also this expression about traditions. There's the Confederate flag, as we know. The governor of South Carolina today, I'm told, on good authority, is calling for the taking down of the flag. By the way, to my mind, that is not the decision of South Carolina. That was decision was made by the United States government when it said we're going to protect all citizens from the traitorous rebellion led by Jefferson Davis and Robert E. Lee and the other white supremacists. That was settled. South Carolina doesn't have a right to decide what it's going to put, whether it's going to put that flag there or not. That flag represents the same thing that Nazism does. It's the exact same concept. It's supremacist. It's a racial supremacist idea. But they say, well, you know, we honored that flag. You know when they started honoring it, Phil? It was in 1961. And why did they put up the Confederate flag in 1961? Because there was a board of, what it was, Brown versus the Board of Education. They said, well, we're going to enforce segregation, apartheid. And to tell people that they're going to do this, they invoke the spirit of the Confederacy. And that's when they put it up. That's when, by the way, it should have been taken down. Now, remember that the American government deserted American citizens of African origin about 1875, after about a 10-year experiment, they called it, with Reconstruction. All Reconstruction really meant was the protection of the rights of all Americans, and particularly the rights of those people who had been formerly enslaved. That's what it was about. And so, and they didn't say, well, we cannot allow them to say it failed. No, you failed the American people. And it is, and the word Reconstruction probably was a bad word. Let's just say, enforce the rights of all Americans wherever they be. And by the way, that includes Chicago and New York City and St. Louis and Los Angeles. You don't get to play games with people's rights. That's what we have to say. So that period, we need to tell them, you can't falsify history and then say we want reconciliation. You have to say, you know, those who control the past control the future. And they've been controlling the past with a great myth, which justifies white supremacist thinking. It's not surprising you find a young recruit with a pistol, because they've been lying to each other all this time. And the Americans were betrayed by the destruction of the, and the removal of the victory of the Civil War. And we had to live through 100 years before the, once again, the movement was called civil rights. All they were saying is, we're Americans, we have these rights, and we demand them, and which they did. But we've had the, I would call it the counter-revolution. We've had the counter-force. But it's time to put that one away. And I'll remind you, by the way, that John Wilkes Booth had exactly the same mindset as this young terrorist. And I agree with all those. Let's get it clear. It was an act of terrorism. And when the head of the FBI says, I'm not sure whether it's terrorism, we say, well, we expect that from you, because the FBI is ridden with racism. J. Edgar Hoover was a very sick racist. A very sick man. He did not have black agents, and they only thought they needed black agents because they wanted to spy on black people, when they decided to have some. So, of course, the head of the FBI is a moron and ought to be fired. Instead, we're all going to have hand-wringing. There's going to be, a ring of hand-holding. There's going to be everybody, let's sing, oh, we shall do something. No, just enforce the damn law, and also stop lying about American history, and also remove every single symbol of white supremacist thinking. And allow the crowds to come and join in and say, you didn't stand for slavery, did you? Here's your hammer and help us destroy this blasted statue. Anyway, this is the Taylor Report. It is Mondays, and it's CIUT 89.5 FM. Phil Conant is here, and we're going to have our guest at along about 5:30 to talk about the Donetsk. But Phil, what is the story now of the boat to Gaza?
Well, this is a press release that came today. A Quebec postal worker joins the Freedom Flotilla 3 to break the blockade of Gaza. And this release is about Christian Martel, a recently retired letter carrier from the Quebec City area. He left the airport in Quebec City on the 17th of June to join Freedom Flotilla 3 that is headed to Gaza. He was one of over 50 citizens from different countries and is joined by three other Canadians, Robert Lovelace, a member of the Ardoc Algonquin First Nation, Kevin Nish, an activist from Victoria, who's already on board the Mary Ann, which left Sweden several weeks ago, and Ahab Latoyev, an engineer and poet from Montreal, member of the steering committee for the Canadian Boat to Gaza and the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. And Martel is a retired member of the Canadian Union of Postal Workers and for many years head of the Quebec section and on international solidarity issues, as well as being a member of the Quebec Federation of Labor executive, and they say he's engaging in an act of courage and solidarity toward the Palestinian people. So we have several
postal workers from Quebec. How'd they get ahead of us?
That's an old story. Quebec is ahead of us. It's like man bites dog. It's the way it works.
Not surprise anybody, does it?
That's right. We have some websites for you to go to get more details. First of all, Bob Lovelace, the Bob Lovelace Decolonization blog. I think we heard from Bob Lovelace last week, right? And he's also, I believe, on his way to join the boat. So you get his blog on Facebook. It's called the Bob Lovelace Decolonization blog. And there's two websites to go to, CanadaBoatGaza.org and GazaArc.org.
Thank you, Phil, very much. Okay, an additional detail on the South Carolina story. I want to say this is not just an American issue. We have this thing called carding here. To me, that's a form of white supremacist thinking. Why is it we get to watch a portion of the population special? They get special police treatment. That is part of white chauvinism, in my opinion, and we ought to. That we should address it. The other thing that we ought to say is don't be deluded about what happened in the American Civil War. The main hotel in Toronto, the Royal York, during the Civil War was the headquarters of Confederate intelligence, and they came and went, including the guys who tried to burn down New York City. They entered the country quite comfortably and went and had a mint julep on Queen Street. And everybody was quite happy to be hanging out with these terrorists. When the war was over and Jefferson Davis was released, which he never should have been, but he was released, he came to Montreal where he was welcome, and he appeared in an opera house where the crowd stood up and interrupted the performance to sing Dixie for him, and he took his hat off. And then he came down to Toronto, and he went to St. Catharines. And when he came to Toronto, the boat landed, a huge crowd was here, including a man named Dennison, who was a Confederate operator and a British operator as well. Dennison had served the Confederacy. He organized a huge crowd and a brass band to greet Jefferson Davis, that wonderful leader from the Confederacy. This is after the Civil War. And then he went on down to St. Catharines because he had a friend there. And that was Jubal Early, one of the worst SOBs that ever served in the Confederacy. And he and Jubal had mint juleps. And Canada has to ask itself, why did that happen? Well, it's a very simple answer. The British wanted the South to win the Civil War. Even Charles Dickens supported the South during the Civil War. He had opposed slavery, but he decided he found a rationale. In Dickens' writings, you'll find a remark he made. He and Carlyle both used the same remark. About not being tricked, not being taken in by, they had a Hottentot, I think was the word they used, a code word for black people about, you know, don't have illusions about, don't enslave them, but don't have any illusions. So Britain was friendly to the South. I know they didn't commit themselves because they're gutless, but they helped. And France was committed to the South, but they lost their nerve too. They got beaten in Mexico. That's why we have Cinco de Mayo. We celebrate the stopping of the French troops, slowing them down so as to prevent them from making a link with the South in the Civil War. By the way, there was one nation that was a friend. Yeah, the Russians. In 1863, the Russians sent a fleet to San Francisco Bay Harbor and to New York Harbor because there was a rumor that the British and the French were thinking of closing those harbors. So the Russians put their ships in both those harbors, and the United States couldn't have been happier, and Mrs. Lincoln made a special visit to their ships and had a great dinner downtown New York with the Russians, including, was it Rimsky-Korsakov?
Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov, the great Russian composer, was an officer in that navy, and yes, he met Mrs. Lincoln, and he spent several weeks in the harbor of New York.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Obama, you're going to have to live with this. The Russians saved your bacon. That's, just look it up. So that's a way the ball bounces. But see, I was talking about the people who control history do not care to share that. Thank heaven we have independent radio, alternative radio. We have other voices. But I'm going to put that on their platter. If they'd like to argue about it, I'd be happy to meet them, because that was one of the great moments in history, because the Russians said to the British and the French, we're against this. It's a bad idea. Don't get involved in that war. And the British kept saying, no, we're thinking of doing it. So then they said, well, then we'll send our ships. And they put them in the New York Harbor and San Francisco Harbor. And they spent the winter just so the message would be what they call loud and clear. It would be a long time for the Americans to ever thank the Russians for anything. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. This is the Taylor Report. I tell you what, we're going to take a break, and then we have a great guest coming up and on the other side.